Vinos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
Walking away from that, I felt like I had a pit in my stomach. It was so moving and also very disturbing, but in a way where it was like, I can never go back to the way I was after experiencing this. And what was interesting is after I got home from that trip, of course, shared with my family, and my granny actually shared her experience growing up during the Jim Crow era and all that stuff, and how like they would do lunch sit-ins. And this was information that I had no idea about until I talked with her about it once I got back. And so it was one thing to experience it, but it was a whole nother thing. It just hit home once I realized, oh, my own granny like went through this in her childhood and growing up.
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. In celebration of Black History Month, Dr. Charles Montgomery Jr., our association's director, will be interviewing Vineyard worship leader Alex Faison and super regional leader Joel Seymour as they share their experiences on the Sankofa Civil Rights Tour. Let's listen in.
Well, grace and peace, Vineyard family. This is Dr. Charles Montgomery. I'm serving as our director of associations and also the lead for our Black Pastors Leadership Association. And our associations are designed with two things in mind. One, we want to create leadership, hospitality, and mentoring opportunities for underrepresented groups. And then we also want to amplify those voices to make sure they're heard nationally. And this month, we're not just amplifying voices, but we're celebrating the history among those among our family who are Black. Black History Month was started by Carter G. Woodson. And one of the things that many people don't know about Carter G. Woodson is that he was a Christian. He was a Sunday school teacher. He was served on the deacon board of a Baptist church. And one of the things that Carter G. Woodson said is that Black history is also American history. And our history has had and has a profound impact upon all of us. And so throughout this month, we're taking some time to share some stories about how this part of our history impacts us as kingdom-minded people and followers of Jesus Christ. And we thought here in the media that one of the creative ways to tease this out was to chat briefly about something several of our vineyard leaders participated in a couple of years ago called Sankofa. Sankofa is an African word, which means to go back and get it. And, you know, my friends, there's value in looking back in history and learning from our history in order to move forward in the unfolding story that God has for all of us. And so we partnered with our friends at the Evangelical Covenant Church on what's called the Sankofa Journey. And in a nutshell, it is really an immersive discipleship pilgrimage through historic civil rights sites in the South. And ultimately, it's designed to help to equip us as followers of Jesus to build beloved community. And one of the leaders who went on this journey with us is none other than Pastor Joel Seymour, serving as our senior, or actually our super regional leader. I forget you have your cape on right here, man, but glad to have you here with us on today.
I got two great titles. You gave me pastor and you gave me super regional leader, so I feel pretty good.
You are somebody. So really just want to ask you just a few questions in terms of Sankofa and just how it has impacted you. And as you think about Sankofa, that word to go back and get it, what are some things that impacted you along the journey?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking me that question, even having me on this. I'm grateful to be able to share my experience and honored to be a part of the podcast for Black History Month. I think, man, I could do 100 things because Sankofa was so impactful. Mm-hmm. I mean, the experiences, the immersive experiences from the museums to just being in the actual historic place where things happened. But for me, it was in the basement of a 16th Street Baptist church.
They're in Birmingham.
In Birmingham, yes. Yeah. And so my going back moment when I think through it is going back to the realization that discipleship was at the very center of the civil rights movement. Mm. And I don't know that I had fully formed that thought yet until Sankofa. You learn about while you're there, like the manuals that they would use that were based on the Sermon on the Mount, or they were discipling people. Here's here's how we're going to react when our enemies do things to us. Here's the proper response. And just really training people on how the Sermon on the Mount ought to affect them in some very obviously horrible situations, violent situations. And yet they were discipling people on how to respond. And the crazy thing is, I was standing in that basement. It hit me like, how did I miss this? I mean, for goodness sakes, the people who were leading the charge had Reverend before their name, you know,
right.
And somehow I had missed that discipleship was at the center. You know, I think of Dr. King when he would, and I'll paraphrase here, but you know, the times he would talk about that the civil rights movement was not just about dealing with the effects that it had on our black citizens in America, but he would also talk with obviously a firm conviction, but also I sensed a firm compassion for white America, that the sinfulness of racism affects all people, even those who are not the ones being persecuted. And that affected me when we were there. I just began to see how discipleship and a deep love for Jesus were at the center of this whole movement. And what I began to do and reflect on, and the going back moment was not only going back to the 50s and 60s and hearing what was going on, how they trained people, how spirituality and discipleship were at the center. I was going back into my own life, Charles, and going, how did I end up with these odd thoughts that somehow spirituality wasn't at the center of this whole thing? And I just began to realize in my upbringing, and I can only speak my upbringing,
sure. But
in my upbringing, in a very Christian upbringing, I had picked up on some thoughts that the civil rights leaders in the 50s and 60s, while courageous, and I remember picking that up and being taught that, I also picked up that they weren't particularly spiritual.
Yes.
That their Christian identity, their love for Jesus, in my circles, that just didn't get talked about a lot. And somehow I picked up that they were more political leaders than spiritual leaders.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, you know, because even you mentioned Dr. King, and of course he got his bachelor's from a really interesting school called Morehouse College in Atlanta, in sociology. Shout out to Morehouse. But he got his Master of Divinity from Crozier Theological Seminary, and then he got his PhD from Boston University in systematic theology. And so very much at the heart of Dr. King and certainly other lieutenants, the Ralph Abernathys, the Billy Kyles, the just a number of people, litany of people, really was at the heart of their movement was, how can we be more and more like Jesus? How can we be more and more like Jesus and the Holy Spirit in terms of actually empowering to live towards and to actually move towards, not just in terms of the reactions, but also towards beloved community. I think that also we actually did something. We went to like a simulation at a lunch counter.
That
somewhere.
Was powerful. Yes, yeah. In Atlanta. Talk at the Civil Rights Museum. Yeah. Yeah, so we're sitting there at the lunch counter. I believe it's the Civil Rights Museum in Atlanta. And so they have a simulation where you're at a lunch counter, you're on the stool, you put your hands down, and you close your eyes, and they put headphones on. And you'll hear someone and like lean over to you and talk and say, hey, remember what we learned. Remember what we learned about how to respond. Remember, you know, the power of peacemaking, the power of loving our enemies. And they're whispering these things. And all of a sudden you hear a crowd come in, and it's the crowd trying to get rid of folks that are sitting at the counter because it's a whites-only establishment. And so there's shouting, there's name calling, and at one point you actually feel the stool move, you know. And I can't remember, you know, you open your eyes and there's a timer and you see how long you made it. You know, I don't know, made it a minute, 20 seconds or something before I just had to open my eyes, like, this is too much, you know. It just got me thinking, like, how deep had these people been formed in Christ, in discipleship, that I make it a minute and 20 seconds?
Yeah.
And, they sat there the whole time and had drinks poured on them. They're kicked, they're beaten. And they took the Sermon on the Mount and they took Jesus's love your enemies and the golden rule. They took that so seriously. They lived it out and did not retaliate. Again, it was another one of those moments where this isn't just a righteous movement. It isn't just a political movement. It's a spiritual movement where people were being formed in Jesus.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful. You know, and oftentimes, you know, when we talk about things like history, we talk about the 50s and the 60s, people think, well, that was way, 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 you know, back then. Mm-hmm. And when we think about now, for example, when we think about the gospel, you mentioned the Beatitudes and these mm-hmm. elements, if you will. How does the gospel compel us to pursue beloved community, in your opinion, in this day and time?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll start, I think, by going back to that church basement where that, kind of all those threads came together for me. So mm-hmm. we're in 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham. If people aren't familiar with that, that's where four young ladies, really young girls,
yeah.
were killed in a bombing on a Sunday morning as people gathered to worship upstairs. Yes. They're in the bathroom in the basement.
Just finishing Sunday school.
Yes, yeah. And they're killed. And that church has a museum in the basement. You can do a tour. You can watch a video. And as we approached it, my assumption was it's a museum. And you go in the basement, and you start with a video, and it's the current pastor. And his opening line was something like, 16th Street Baptist Church exists to win souls to Jesus Christ. I mean, right out. That's the gospel. Right out.
Yes.
Right out of the gate. And then as you're looking at the timeline on the side, and you're looking at the timeline of the church, and at one point it posts what the church is currently doing, and there's all these bullet points, and like number one in their terminology was soul winning, mm-hmm. you know, and evangelism, marriage class, intercessory prayer group, midweek service, you know, compassion ministry, you know, all these things. And it just hit me, this is not a museum. This is an active church where the gospel right out of the gate, the mm-hmm. good news of Jesus, soul winning, outreach, evangelism, is at the forefront of what they're doing. And for me, there was that moment of like, this is the gospel. And I don't have to choose between community righteousness and personal righteousness. I don't have to choose between winning souls for eternity sake and making a difference in the world today, mm-hmm. that the gospel propels both. I think the gospel of the kingdom would say that I want people to know Jesus Christ, to go to heaven, to be saved for eternity. But I also think salvation and even personal salvation should influence how we as a community live and the righteousness there. And in this particular case, obviously prejudice and racism, mm-hmm. and that it touches that. As Vineyard people, I would say the gospel is, we always are saying, you know, the kingdom is already and not yet.
Yes.
And we talk about the Lord's Prayer, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. If that's a gospel, and we do this with healing, right? We'll say whatever's happening in heaven ought to be happening on earth, and so we pray the kingdom comes as we're praying for a sick person. Well, that goes well beyond that too. It goes to in heaven, all the cultures and all the races will be worshiping Jesus together, mm-hmm. Every tongue and tribe and nation. And so part of our call of the good news is let's do our part to make that happen here and now. And that too is part of the gospel. It's not either or.
It's a both and.
100%. What we're up against and have been since the dawn of time is we're not going to do this under our own power. We need the power of Jesus Christ to come save us as people and redeem us and transform us on the inside. And as that happens, then I think we can see more transformation in the greater community.
Yeah, I just think as we kind of turn the corner, I'm thinking about, you know, what Paul said, and I am not ashamed of the gospel, mm. you know, for it is the power to everyone that believes, to the Jew as well as to the Gentile. And we can go on and on and on in terms of just various categories that we put people in. The power of the gospel is to bring all of us together under the banner of Jesus Christ. Now, any other ways the Sankofa journey helped you in your journey to be a disciple of Jesus?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as being on that experience, it helped me, I think, be a better listener, even as I've encountered other situations, other, you know, places even around the world or other pieces of the country to just listen to other people's experiences and to remember I've been formed a certain way and I can have some bias. I have a set of glasses on that might skew how I see things. And so it's me going to Jesus saying, Jesus, help me be a better listener. Help me to understand other people's experiences. Help me to see my own biases. I think also it's given me some courage. I mean, there's something about standing in places where people took a stand, and that challenges me on what do I need to take a stand on? What's worth taking a stand? So you walk across Selma, you know, at the bridge there, at Selma, in the
Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Yes, named after a KKK leader, you know, I mean, he was also a representative or something in the state house, so that's why it's named that. But he was a KKK leader, and the irony of that, and walking across the bridge, and as you're walking, and it's kind of a curved bridge with a slope up and a peaks and comes back down, and just knowing what those folks were facing as they came back over, and yet they continued to march peacefully, and took the persecution that was on the other side, and yet that challenged me of you really can trust the words of Jesus where, you know, you gotta die to gain life. Mm. Or even if you think of the crucifixion, it's sacrifice that ends up bringing life. Not the sword, not violence, you know, as a reaction to being violated yourself, but just that kind of sacrifice. And that turned a nation, really. I mean, those images, those pictures of non-retaliation and people living out their faith to that level and being that committed to peace, that made me think about my own life of where do I need to be courageous? Where do I not trust Jesus in his words? When do I think I got to take things into my own hands, my own power to try to make something happen instead of trusting him? So it's a powerful experience, my friend.
I certainly appreciate it. And what you're just really confirming for me and our listening audience is there's certainly great value in looking back in order to look forward. And we can look back at our history to learn the lessons of how to love one another better and really how to accept God's invitation to become a beloved community. And you talked just a little bit about the responses, the nonviolent type of resistance and these type of elements that were really born out of a Christian ethic. And one of the things that we do in Vineyard USA is that our dear brother Josh Williams does have a nonviolent training type of seminar that's rooted in the Bible, rooted in the Christian ethic, that's available for all of us to look at and listen to. And we'll have that in the show notes. And one of the things you also spoke about was the fact that our civil rights movement really at the heart was a Christian movement led by Christian people that loved Jesus and were following Jesus, empowered by the Holy Spirit. And again, if you're interested in learning more about the role of the religion, the role of Christianity and the civil rights movement, also in our show notes, we'll have a couple of articles in there, one by Dr. Bernard Lafayette, which I believe is really insightful and helps us to kind of creatively think and reflect, as you've done, Joel, in terms of how things in our history can impact us in terms of to move forward. And so we just want to leave you by saying, as you think about looking back, I'm saying this to the listening audience, here's our challenge to you. What are some areas in your life that God can use you to live out beloved community where you are? That's our challenge to you. And again, Joe, I thank you for spending some time and sharing with us the impact of not just Sankofa, but the impact of looking back in order to look forward. And just God bless you, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me on here, Charles.
God bless you.
This summer, Vineyard USA is hosting our national conference, Melody and Harmony, in two locations, Denver, Colorado on June 16th through 19th and Cincinnati, Ohio on July 14th through 17th. We hope that by offering two locations and dates, everyone, pastors, leaders, volunteers, even those just curious about the Vineyard, that everyone will be able to find a time to join us. The conference will also have specific programming for adults, youth, and kids. As far as our theme, throughout history, the Lord has been composing a beautiful melody through the story of his people and his church. And for the past 50 years, the Vineyard Movement has had the privilege of adding its own unique harmony to this grand symphony. Registration is now open with early bird pricing, so make sure to check out vineyardusa.org to learn more and register today.
Well, grace and peace, Vineyard family. This is Dr. Charles Montgomery, and I have the opportunity to lead our associations here in Vineyard USA. And our associations are designed with a couple of things in mind. They are designed to provide leadership, hospitality, and mentoring spaces for our historically underrepresented groups across the Vineyard, and then also to help to amplify the voices so that those voices are heard and reverberated all throughout the movement, in and throughout the Vineyard movement. And one of the great voices that we have here on today is Sister Alex Faison from the Vineyard Church of Davenport. She's the first time here on the We Are Vineyard podcast. I want to say welcome to you, my dear sister.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a privilege. Thanks for being here. And I am just interested because you were one of the leaders who had the opportunity to go on the Sankofa trip with us. And as you go back and you reflect and as you think about it, what were some of the things about that Sankofa experience that just impacted you in a major way?
There were so many things that impacted me. One of them was, first off, just being invited. That was huge. I found myself wondering, like, why am I here with the team? But I know that that was just because the Lord wanted me to be there, and that's good enough. And so it was an amazing trip, even like being a little bit uncomfortable with not knowing everyone super well and not really being prepared for what we were going to be doing. Like, I had an idea, of course, but I didn't know the magnitude of it. And so, I love museums. And so that was one of the main things that impacted me, was just getting to travel to the different places, go to the different museums. Mm-hmm. To be more specific, two of them, I mean, all of them really stuck out to me, but two of them really like went home with me. Okay. The first one was the Human and Civil Rights Museum in Atlanta. And we, right when you walk in, I mean, it was a beautiful museum, but right when you walk in, there was the lunch sit-ins, like the simulation.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And again, like you get into this random line and you don't really know what you're in line for. And then you sit at this table and you're like, okay, this is cool. But then it was just so immersive with like putting the headphones on, like sitting at the actual lunch table, and just the whole experience, like you actually felt like you were a part of it, which was huge. And them, like the voices that were talking to you and the words that were being said, and then like the chair movements and all that stuff. It was really, walking away from that, I felt like I had a pit in my stomach, because it was so moving and also very disturbing, but in a way where it was like, I can never go back to the way I was after experiencing this. And what was interesting is after I got home from that trip, I, you know, of course shared with my family and stuff like that. And, my granny actually shared her experience. She was born and raised in Paducah, Kentucky.
Come on, now, Paducah.
That's more northern Kentucky. But anyways, she shared with me her experience growing up and like during the Jim Crow era and all that stuff, and how like they would do lunch sit-ins. And this was information that I had no idea about until I talked with her about it once I got back. And so
wow.
she shared with me some of those, the conversations that they had to have. And I don't think it was to the extent that we experienced in the simulation, but still, like, it was a lunch sit-in and people, you know, talked to her similarly that we experienced in the simulation, and they had to do the pep talks beforehand and all of that stuff. So it was one thing to experience it, but it was a whole nother thing to, like, it just hit home once I realized, oh, my own granny, like, went through this in her childhood and growing up and stuff. So there were other parts of that museum that were really beautiful, but the lunch sit-in really stuck with me.
That's really interesting. Sorry to cut you off, but it was just interesting in the sense that you said you had a chance to speak about that with your grandmother, who is living, by the grace of God, still here with us. And, you know, it's one of the things we talk about, you know, history like that was, like, so far, so long ago in that sense. But we actually, in that sense, have people who are among us today, which shows that's just not, that wasn't a long time ago in that sense. I mean, it certainly is still a part of our experience that people are carrying. And so just thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah. The other museum that really stuck out to me, and I will talk about it every day of my life if I can, was the Legacy Museum. I can't remember. That was in Montgomery, I think.
Yes, it's a great name. Yes. Yeah, Montgomery. Amen.
That museum was just amazing. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. There was just a wealth of knowledge in there, like a wealth of information.
This
everywhere
is the
that you
museum.
Looked,
the Legacy Museum.
Everywhere you looked, there was information, and just like the art and the animations and all of that stuff. It really felt like we were being submerged in the experience. And the Legacy Museum, I won't do it justice the way that I explain this, but it's all about how, like, slavery, Jim Crow, and mass incarceration. I feel like I'm missing one of them, but all of those things are tied together. And so it's just this whole story as you're walking through the museum and you're getting all this information about how it's all tied together. There was one part in that museum, I mean, again, I loved all of it, but one part that stuck with me, there were these, like, holographic things. This was a slavery part, and, like, there were people, you walk up and it triggers the video. And it looks like an actual person sitting there, and they're just telling you their story. And one of them was like, "Have you seen my kids?" And they were snatched away from me and all that. One of them was this woman singing an old hymn that I remember growing up in church singing all the time. And it was just powerful. And I just found myself, like, weeping all throughout that section, and really, again, like, all throughout the museum. And there was no way for us to be able to grab all the information in the museum. So you'd have to go back again and again to be able to really grasp all of it and to see everything. And another beautiful and mind-blowing part of that is it's only $5 to get into it and experience all of that stuff. So it's just available for, you know, everyone. And I think it's a museum that everyone should go and experience. It's really good.
I appreciate that. Talk to me a bit, because we had the opportunity in the last segment to talk with Joel just a bit about how it affected him, particularly as a one of our white siblings, and you specifically as a young African-American woman, and moving through those experiences. Talk a little bit more about just the impact that those stories, even the actual visceral experience, you know, had for you.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of different emotions. First off, it was maybe a little bit of shame, just because there are things that I just didn't know. And I had that thought in my head, like, this is my history. Why wouldn't I know this? So that kind of woke me up a little bit. And then another thing was, It almost felt like it almost felt like my family's business was being put on display for everyone. So there's a little bit of uncomfortability and also like irritation that came up that I was a little bit surprised about. And to be very frank and honest, there were some anger or like just even being upset that came up where it's like, why are people treated like this? And even going back to the Legacy Museum, again, it's a whole story of how like slavery and Jim Crow era and mass incarceration are like all tied in together. And so it's not like we were going back and seeing history and being like, oh, this happened way back when. You mentioned that a little bit. Like, no, this is still happening today. It just looks different. And so some of that justice started to come to rise up in me. And this is kind of going on a tangent, but I was so grateful for our time together at the end of the nights, like the whole group, and how we sat together and we actually discussed everything that we experienced that day. And that was a little bit uncomfortable because, again, all of these emotions, not really knowing how to deal with them, especially around people, and especially around people that look differently than me.
For our people that are listening, We Are Vineyard podcast, it's important to know that one of the things on Sankofa Experience is that as we walk through not just the museums, but the entire experiences in the civil rights sites, that we actually did that in dyads or triads with different ethnicities walking together. And so as you're talking about that debriefing, you're having a debrief, particularly as an African-American, and there may be another African-American in that group, or it might be someone that you're talking to of a different ethnicity. And so kind of important to say. So as you're saying that, talk to me about, you know, what that was like. You know, why do you think that it was important? Why do you think it's important for you to, you know, be able to articulate, you know, how that part of our history, in this case, American history, impacted you? And then what was it like for you hearing that from someone of a different ethnicity?
Mm-hmm. For me personally, I am just always tempted to disengage when I feel those big emotions, or, you know, if I'm overwhelmed, which a lot of these experiences that we had were overwhelming in a good way, but it was just a lot. And so I felt that tension of like wanting to just disengage. But I remember them saying a lot of times throughout the trip, like, we highly encourage you. You need to keep pressing in and keep showing up and stuff. And so that was me personally. I know it was necessary to be in those triads, those small groups with people that were different than me, because that's where the true work is happening. Like, it'd be easier for me to go to one of my Black brothers or sisters and be like, wasn't that hard? Aren't you irritated? Whatever. But for me to sit with, you know, one of my white friends or Hispanic friends or whoever and be like, this is how I'm feeling. This is what's coming up for me. And just allow myself to have that space to process, and then for them to ask really good questions. And again, it's uncomfortable, and it's not the most conventional, not conventional, but like the way that we would really want to do it naturally as humans. But really, it just created safe spaces all around. And I think that was so important.
Yeah, that has been very powerful when you speak about that. That's where the real work happens. That it's not just something in which we just live in such a polarized society now. And so for us, it's easy to go back to our own, you know, specific corners and talk about experiences. But if we really want to pursue a beloved community, it's super important that the real work happens in that sense in which we're able to engage honestly and forthrightly with one another. So that's very powerful. Let's kind of turn the corner a little bit and kind of head home. And again, just listening to you, this had a profound impact upon you. So now you as a leader headed back to your home church at Vineyard Davenport. What was that like for you? Did you have an opportunity to discuss or debrief, you know, with them? Any impact there or any outcomes that came back from that came from you actually going back to your home church and speaking to, you know, people there that you either work with or in church with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really exciting, being able to share the experience with them. I talked a lot more at length with like the different museums and the experiences and stuff like that. But one of the main, most exciting things that happened is actually like the pastoral team, after sharing all of that and really saying like, hey, we should pay attention to this, and we should like make effort to like press into this more and see how this can impact our church, and our city around us. We, after that discussion, we ended up creating our own little version of that trip, the pastoral team and I.
Wow.
And we went to some of those same museums. So we went to, we drove to Atlanta and went to this Human and Civil Rights Museum. And we went to Montgomery and went back to the Legacy Museum. And there are some other places that we went to as well. And it was, it spanned out for a couple days, just like it did with Sankofa, of course. And when I tell you, like, the conversations that just naturally came out of those experiences together during that trip and even after, there was, we just felt really close. And there was that same safe space that I experienced with Sankofa within my own team that I've been working with them for, I don't know, 9, 10 years. And I had never experienced that type of connection with them, which, by the way, they are also a majority white team. And so, again, that uncomfortability that I experienced in Sankofa, I experienced it the same way. But again, I kept like pressing in and showing up and having those conversations with them. It was really powerful. And also, to add one more thing, we wanted to check that out first as a pastoral team to see how does this work for us? And the next goal is to have a small group of people. We have a diversity team at our church, to have a small group of people to then take them on a similar trip like that and have those same conversations. So not exactly like Sankofa. I don't think anybody can replicate the beautiful things that they're doing, but something that fits with our context. So it's really exciting.
Well, that's awesome. Something just as beautiful in that sense, because again, as you said, that's where the real work happens. A lot of times we think about the different histories, think about Black history, the histories of other ethnicities in our country and our world. We just say that happened way back then, or this is something that's just a theory or out there. You actually, and your church and your team, are actually going on the ground level, rolling up your sleeves, doing the hard work, really talking about more to the pursuit of beloved community. It starts with personal proximity. It starts with actually having real and authentic relationships and conversations to see how our stories individually and collectively connect with God's story and how we move forward together. And so I just want to affirm that. And I just, as our listeners are listening to us, I want to really ask them to think about, in that sense, how can you take history, in this case, Black history, but also other histories of ethnicity in your churches, and begin to roll up your sleeves and have real conversations and see how your stories connect God's stories and how those stories collectively help us to move forward. So thank you so much for that. That's really awesome piece. And again, there's certainly great value in looking forward. I'm looking back, I should say, in order to look forward. We can look back at history to learn lessons of how to love one another better and accept God's invitation to build beloved community. So again, we ask persons, as you think about looking back, what are some areas in your life that God can use you to live a beloved community where you are? So my dear sister, thank you so much for your time. A very rich conversation. God bless you.
You too. Thank you.
A as we celebrate our 50-year anniversary in the Vineyard. If you're interested in learning more about Vineyard history, there are plenty of resources for you. Check out our show notes for links to books, YouTube videos, and more to learn about Vineyard history and identity. And make sure to keep listening to the podcast this year for stories of Vineyard churches throughout the year.